Good afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery.
But leave me no opening to say anything?
No. I'm just going to move on right on through that part. It's insignificant. Pape Machinery is our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. And you can visit them at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. They've got everything John Deere, Honda, Steel. They've got it in stock. Go up and see them. Their phone number is 226-9226, or you can get them on the web at papemachinery.com. Big website, too. You can find everything you want. You can even price your own stuff out on that website.
Hmm.
Yeah. Buy online.
P-A-P-E, machinery?
P-A-P-E.
Nice.
Yep.
There you have it.
Yeah.
All right, so I don't want to jam up a bunch of time because we were having a fun conversation with our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Bry. And I hope that you will go back and listen to his previous shows. He's always got tons of good information, just, I don't know, stuff either you didn't know or hadn't thought of in a while. And we're lucky. He has time on Sunday afternoons, it seems. He likes to hang out with us. So we're kind of living,
I'm glad he can. Yeah.
It's a heck of a lot more fun than I don't know. Sometimes it's fun to read it, but then I don't know. I think we all like being told, you know, tell me a story.
Yeah.
So it's easy to remember when you explain it like you do, Dr. Bry. So where do you want to go next?
Well, before we move on to more national security stuff,
yeah.
I couldn't help noting that in the introduction you mentioned that you're married to a Welshman.
It old Cundiff over
Irish.
Here.
Yeah, you're Irish. And, oh, I didn't know he was your husband.
Yeah.
You're Irish and you're married to a Welshman.
Yeah, go figure that out. Huh?
Maybe that's why you constantly have me on your show as a guest, because you may not know it, but the Irish and the Welsh are supposed to have saved Western civilization.
I know. Isn't that great?
Yeah, one of my favorite professors in graduate school, Sky, a Welshman named Lawrence Evans, Professor Lawrence Evans, probably passed away now. I haven't seen him in decades, but he was a Welshman. Excellent. One of the most brilliant scholars on foreign affairs and international security I ever had the privilege to meet. And he was quite serious that he had this theory that the Welsh and the Irish saved Western civilization. And I think he's right when you think of the history of it, because they were the only areas. Wales and Ireland, the monasteries that were there, mm-hmm. were bastions of learning, high bastions of learning, and they had preserved the Roman manuscripts from the Roman Empire, and they're the only part. They weren't overrun by the Anglo-Saxon barbarians, during the Dark Ages, and so a lot of what we know about classical history. The history of Rome, the roots of our Western civilization, the political ideas that became the foundation of America and of our present were saved for us by the Irish and the Welsh. Just another little historical footnote for your readers' interest that they won't be reading in one of my articles. At least not, I haven't written about it yet.
Well, I think there's a book out, and I believe it's called How the Irish Saved...
Christianity.
Yeah. They were the ones that saved all the manuscripts and when they were burning everything.
Yeah, they were too fierce to be... they were like, oh, those guys are all nuts. Leave them alone up there. You'll just die if you go up there. Just skip them. And they kept all of that. But just a spoiler alert for you, in case you're an audiobook person... I got that book on a cassette tape years ago. Guy was a great writer, but wowza, not a good book reader. He was. I never could listen to more than 10 minutes. I kept falling asleep. It was terrible.
Oh yeah, that's a bad trait when you're narrating a book.
If you have insomnia, the Irish, How the Irish Saved Christianity, get the audiobook.
You'll blow through it.
you get your sleep pattern back in order. But no, it was a great book. That's why I thought it'd be fun to listen to while I was driving. I thought I'd listen to it again. But yeah, I was going to crash the car, so that was not good.
Well, the Irish are still trying to save Christianity, it seems. But back to India and the the blackout war between China-India and India, the one-way blackout war, where China blacked out Mumbai, threatened to black out the whole of the Indian national grid, and India's national experts and defense ministry officials have been calling for ripping out all of the equipment they purchased from China, because one of the big mistakes they made that made them vulnerable, apparently, is that they've got a lot of transformers in their electric grid from China, a lot of SCADAs, that is, control systems, not just in the electric grid, but these SCADAs are also in their railway system, all kinds of critical infrastructures. And, you know, they're concerned that these things are almost certainly designed by China to be vulnerable to cyber attacks, probably to EMP attacks. And so going forward, you know, they've got to get transformers and SCADA systems from somewhere else, from some actor that isn't going to use them as a weapon against them, as has just happened last week. And I'm hoping that the Biden administration will pay attention to that, you know, and reverse the decision to suspend President Trump's executive order. It's called Securing the Bulk Power System, you know, which was designed, that executive order was designed to end U.S. dependency on foreign imports for critical electric grid equipment like transformers and SCADAs, so that they would be made in America. And that's just common sense. I mean, I don't think, and especially we shouldn't be buying from an overt enemy like China.
No kidding.
But I wouldn't even support, and I think President Trump, when he signed the executive order, you know, also had in mind that we would start ending our dependency on places like South Korea and Germany for this equipment. You know, even with an allied country, a friendly country, you know, the chain of custody, that equipment has to be manufactured overseas. It has to be shipped to us. You know, a country like China or Russia or North Korea or Iran, you know, they've got the intelligence forces that could intercept that equipment and put vulnerabilities into it. You know, it would be hard, you know, to add a chip or something to it, you know, while it's being sent overseas, sent to us, you know, so that without our knowledge, and since it goes, it doesn't pass through any part of the U.S. government. It goes right into the hands of the private sector. Our private sector utilities, you know, they're not focused on national security. They don't even have anybody working there that's really a cyber expert or an expert on EMP who would know that, hey, you know, this system, there's something been added to this system that shouldn't be there, you know, that could potentially make it vulnerable. Now, obviously, it's worse when you have the China actually making the thing, because they can design the vulnerability right into it.
Sure.
But the bottom line is that I wouldn't trust any equipment coming from overseas. You know, even stuff made in America could potentially be sabotaged, but if the chain of custody is in our own hands, we've got a much, much better opportunity to make sure that the stuff is secure. You know, just the way we do when we make fighter aircraft or aircraft carriers. You know, we don't want to trust foreign countries to be making that stuff for us. We need to make it ourselves.
Sure.
And so equipment upon which the lives of 330 million Americans depend, and that our electronic civilization depends upon, should be made in America. You know, we used to make it all in America. We invented the electric grid and exported the technology all over the world. And, you know, it's really ironic that it's gotten to a situation where this technology, which is foundational to our modern electronic civilization, isn't made by us anymore. And that's got to change if we expect not to become victims in the future.
And we got to take a break. But when we come back, maybe you could talk a little bit about why an American firm, you know, like Tesla or somebody, couldn't start making these transformers. Why aren't they pursuing that? Obviously, with all the security risks that are out there in the current equipment, there's obviously a market for it. But let's talk about that when we come back.
Okay.
Yeah.
We can do that, Bill.
Hey, thanks, Aaron.
You're listening to We the People. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
.us.
Like me and you, so let the voice of freedom sing out through this land. This is our country. From the East Coast to the West Coast, down the Dixie Highway, back home.
That old man spent his life living off the land. Dirty hands and a clean soul. It breaks his heart seeing foreign cars filled with fuel it isn't ours. And wearing cotton we didn't grow. He's got the red, white, blue, blind hound on a farm. Semper Fi tattooed on his left arm. Spent a little more in the store for a tag. In the back it says,
there you go. Yeah, so why don't we make our own transformers here and we sell them to the rest of the world? I mean, that seems like it'd be a money-making venture.
It was a money-making venture for many decades, and that's what we did. And we do make a lot of our own transformers, most of them. There are the most important transformers, though. They're called extra high voltage transformers, EHV transformers. And beneath this, there's all kinds of lower transformers. You know, there's high transformer voltage transformers and medium voltage and low voltage, et cetera, et cetera. And we make those in this country, most of them. But we don't make the extra high voltage transformers anymore, the EHV transformers. And they're the most important one. They're the foundation of our electronic civilization. They enable you to take electricity from, let's say, the Hoover Dam and drive it to Southern California or Colorado somewhere, hundreds of kilometers away. Then there's another big transformer, EHV transformer, at the end of the line that steps it down. And then it feeds it into these lower transformers and into the so it can be distributed. So, you know, a 500,000 volts gets stepped down to 120 volts that you use in your home. And the big transformers, we started getting out of the habit of making them so that we don't make any anymore because slave labor is less expensive. And, the labor in South Korea is less expensive. And once you stopped manufacturing them, you know, there's craftsmanship that goes into these transformers. They're still basically, they were invented by Nikola Tesla, you know, back at the turn of the last century, around 1900, you know, when the first electric grid, big national electric grid that used big transformers, EHV transformers, was at Niagara Falls, New York. And the transformers we have today are very similar. I mean, they're very similar, but there's artwork and craftsmanship that goes into them. They can't be mass produced. Every big transformer has a unique role to play in the grid, but the windings inside the heart of the transformer have to be done by hand and done in a special way, and there have to be just so many windings made of so much material and insulated by hand in a certain way in order for it to work. And we basically when we stopped manufacturing them and became dependent upon other countries, we lost that craftsmanship, and we have to get it back. Now, this vulnerability, fortunately, you know, because of the preaching of the EMP Commission and others, you know, Washington has been aware of that vulnerability for a while, and we have made some effort to start manufacturing big transformers in our country again. I think there are three firms that have stepped up that are going to try to start making big extra high voltage transformers in the country again. I don't think we've actually manufactured one yet, but they're moving in that direction. And we won't know for years until they've succeeded. You know, a transformer like that is supposed to have a lifespan of 30 or 40 years. Brazil tried to end its dependency on foreign suppliers and become an exporter, and it started manufacturing its own extra high voltage transformers, but it found out that they burned out in 5 years. So, you know, we won't know for a while, not until we actually start putting transformers into the system and to see how long they last, that we've gotten back the lost art of making these big transformers. So that's part of the problem. It's just, you know, very difficult to do. And in fact, the worldwide production of extra high voltage transformers, all the countries in the world only make 180 of them every year. You know, there's 2,000 transformers like that in our country. So that's an idea of how difficult it is to make one of these things.
Sure.
They're bigger than a house. They weigh hundreds of tons. Just moving them around is a project. We've only got 3 railroad cars in the whole country that can carry an extra high voltage transformer. And when you try to move it into place in the grid, you know, the highways have to be widened, bridges have to be reinforced, you know, so it's a big, big deal, just moving them around. But all the more reason to make them here instead of trying to have
sure.
to
yeah, no kidding.
Bring them in from overseas. That's one reason. The main reason, though, is just greed and laziness. You know, it's if they can save a few pennies, you know, and get it from overseas, the utilities will always do that because the profit margin is always top, is always their highest priority. And and so those have been the reasons for America, you know, basically losing that technological edge when it came to our own electric grid. But now that it's understood that the electric grid, electric power is foundational to our national security, we're starting to see things in a different light, and hopefully intervention by cybersecurity guards, czars, and presidents and Congress will hopefully start changing this.
Have any of those high voltage transformers failed and shut down parts of the grid?
Oh yes. During Hurricane Andrew in Florida, there was an extra high voltage transformer that failed and caused a protracted blackout. They had a heck of a time replacing it and finding workarounds. If we were to lose large numbers of them, and I'm not talking about most of them. In fact, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission did I'll call it a sensitive study, but I'm going to call it a study that was reported in the Wall Street Journal. Okay, there was a reported study by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission that was in a series of pretty famous articles by in the Wall Street Journal. And according to the study, if 9 of these big transformers out of the 2,000 in the country were knocked out by terrorists, you know, it would cause a national blackout lasting 18 months. So we have had transformer failures, and they have, you know, they have caused protracted problems. But fortunately, we haven't had simultaneous failure of even small numbers. You know, fortunately, they've failed like one at a time, so we've managed to handle it.
Well, I think that you guys have been talking about this for how many years? When did the EMP Commission first start?
2001. So we've been talking about this for 20 years, 21 years now.
Wow. You would think that the first time you talked about it, everybody would go, oh, good idea. We better take care of all this stuff.
I have to add a footnote to that, okay?
Okay.
That's when the EMP Commission was talking about it. When I moved from the CIA over to working on the House Armed Services Committee in 1995, you know, the first thing I did was, because I was the CIA's nuclear weapons and EMP guy, especially on EMP. I was their senior expert on that. And almost nobody in Congress had even heard of EMP. But I brought it to their attention, and, you know, they were very concerned about it. And I thought back in 1995, wow, this is going to be great. You know, Congress will pass a bill, and we will solve this problem. You know, the country will be protected. Then I can go on and do something else. You know, that was 1995. And, man, I had no idea when I left CIA and went to work for the policy world, you know, left the intelligence world. Well, I've always had a foot in the intelligence world, but mainly I've been trying to move things forward in the policy world, working through Congress, congressional commissions, and the Department of Defense and Homeland Security. I had no idea how hard it is to get that elephant to move. You know, here I am, an old man. I was a young man when I broached this, and I thought, oh, this is going to be a great thing on my resume. We'll get this problem solved in 1 year, and I'll save hundreds of millions of lives. And even if I don't,
and it'll be totally easy because they'll completely get it. It's not even complicated.
Yes, exactly. You know, and everybody did seem to get it. You know, but the institutional problems, you know, with FERC and NERC and the corruption of congressional energy committees. You know, you have a majority of Congress wanting to do something, but it only takes one chairman. You know, the energy committees control what happens to NERC and FERC and to the utilities. And these guys have been in the pocket of the utilities forever, too. You know, when you look at who makes campaign contributions to the Democrat and Republican who chair these energy committees, you know, they have very cozy, too cozy relationships. It's really amazing that it's not illegal for the chairman of an energy committee to be getting money from the electric utilities, you know? I mean, that's...
Yeah, it seems a little inbred there.
Yeah, exactly. That seems a little corrupt.
The other thing, too, I guess, we've never really asked you this, but maybe after this break, could you sort of explain, I would think, if you... But, you know, here I'm thinking like...
You're not going to go all logic, are you?
I've gone into the labyrinth of logic where there's nothing but, you know, sadness and despair. But... I'm thinking, if you're a power company, wouldn't you want to have a good grid so that it doesn't blow up in your face and you don't have to pay people because they died or you burned down their house or it just didn't work? You would think that they would have some investment in their future or their longevity. How about that? Maybe that's a better word. When we come back, maybe we can...
I would love to answer that question.
Yes, because you know what?
I would love to.
All right, good. We're going to come right back. Our guest is Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. You can find us at We the People Radio.
.us.
Is that the answer?
That's the answer.
It's the answer to the question. So seriously, though, any other business, you would want to take care of it?
Well, make sure your product is always available so that people could buy it.
And you wouldn't want to have to pay big fines and fees and stuff for screwing up. And so why is it that they're willing to do that?
Well, Aaron, as a student of Christianity, you should know that when the choice is before you to yield to the immediate temptation of putting an extra dollar in your pocket,
the devil made him do it,
versus sacrificing sacrificing that profit for the sake of public safety and doing the right thing. You know, ever since the fall from paradise, we will tend to do the wrong thing. And the evidence is before you in California and Texas. You know, why is it that the California Electric Utilities, you know, would do such stupid things like not replace high power tower line, towers supporting high voltage power lines, okay, that are 100 years old and that will clearly be blown down, you know, in high winds, or provide proper vegetation management so that a dead tree won't fall on the power lines and start wildfires? Why would you do that, you know? Why would you, in Texas, not provide the insulation and the heating elements? Call a northern state and say, hey, I know that ice storms are rare in Texas, but sometimes they happen. You know, what should I do? And then do it.
Yeah.
Not a hard thing to do, not an expensive thing to do. But we know from recent experience that they have done the wrong thing. And, you know, and I guess it's because they put profit, and we know historically this is also true. Libertarians have a real hard time understanding that. And here I'll probably turn off all your audience, okay? Because there is such a faith in the free market, and I have faith in the free market. I'm a free market true believer as well. But the founders were the ultimate libertarians, I think, the ultimate practical libertarians. And they knew that you couldn't go dispense with government altogether and just let society go on without government doing the job of national security and public safety. That's why we have government, you know, because we know that the market, its highest priority is profit, not public safety, not national security. Its highest priority is profit. And in fact, it can be destructive to the public interest, and will be if it operates in the dark, unsupervised, unregulated, uncriticized for long enough. There was a time when Coca-Cola was cocaine cola, and they actually put cocaine in the soda, you know, in the 19th century to addict their customers before we had a Food and Drug Administration to make sure that didn't happen. You know, there was a time when you could open up a can of peaches and there'd be a human thumb inside, you know, before we had a Food and Drug Administration.
Yeah, there was a time when you didn't get a vaccine that actually went through the whole process before the
before they gave it to you and you run the risk you'll glow in the dark in here.
Yeah.
There was a time when automobiles didn't have safety glass or seatbelts or bumpers that would work, you know, at speeds higher than 5 miles per hour. You know, and airline safety was not what it was until we had a Federal Aviation Administration. Mm-hmm. So we didn't have to just take the word of the airlines for it. And that's why, because the electric utilities, there isn't really any state-level or federal-level government agency to oversee these guys and make sure they're doing the right things to provide for public safety and national security. Their reasoning seems to be that, well, I'd rather have that dollar in my pocket. You know, ice storms are rare enough so that hopefully it won't happen on my watch. And I'd rather be able to give a good report to my shareholders that I've increased our profits so I can afford to buy that new log cabin on Mount Shasta than invest the money in something that isn't going to happen for 25 or 50 years. And when it comes to cyber warfare or EMP attacks, oh, that's never going to happen. You know, why should I spend money on that? I'd rather have a more impressive bottom line for my shareholders so that I can get an increase in my salary. And so that's why, you know, because we're fallen from paradise, and when people are not having to pay any penalty for their wrongdoing, they'll continue to do wrongdoing. It's really interesting to me. I mean, it's an observation. I don't want to get your radio station burned down, but...
It's supposed to rain today anyway. We'll be okay.
Not like we haven't tried before.
You know, last summer we had cities burning across America because of the injustice done to George Floyd, a man who was, many people believe, you know, murdered by the police, right? And then great injustice was done to him. And here we have 100 people dead in Texas, froze to death in Texas, in effect murdered by the electric power industry. I don't even know the names of any of the victims. I haven't seen them published in the newspapers. You know,
they stopped talking about it pretty quick.
As much outrage.
Yeah.
They deserve at least as much outrage. And people need to get mad and stop this from happening. There are even more people dead in California. And, you know, the utilities are literally getting away with murder. But I hope that answers your question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just...
And not to beat a dead horse, but George Floyd's family is $26 million richer right now because the city of Minneapolis just rolled over on a judgment for him. So, I mean, it's a shame the guy died, but... Yeah, that's a pretty good payout.
Wow.
Considering you have all these people in Texas that died. And
all they were doing was sitting at home trying to stay warm.
Trying to stay warm.
I would like to see their families. That would actually help solve the problem. You know, if the utilities started having to pay the property damage,
sure.
The deaths,
mm-hmm.
You know, they should have to pay. At least, if not actually be put on trial and go to jail, you know, for murder or manslaughter, you know, there's really no excuse for it. You know, it's not like some kind of unforeseen act of God. What
right.
has happened with the wildfires? What has happened with the ice storms? This was entirely foreseeable
sure.
that these things would happen.
Well,
entirely
and,
foreseeable.
And we've done some shows. Jesus Arredondo is a policy expert in California. I'm sure he works elsewhere, but he is in California, and we've got a couple of shows with him in our archives that if people are curious about what the California infrastructure looks like, the thing I cannot forget about the show we did with him, we were talking about the renewable mandate and how ridiculous and fanciful it is, and he asked us, well, you remember when they came up with 17% renewable mandate at 70%? No, but okay. He said, yeah, you know how they came up with that? They decided 15 sounded too low and 20 sounded too high, so they picked 17, but they had zero plan for how to get to that.
Raised that now,
yeah,
I think, to
it had
like
nothing
30.
To do with what they thought they could actually achieve. It was just a number that sounded good. He said, I was sitting in the meeting. I know exactly where that came from. So you have states doing that at the same time. And
well, it puts the whole system. Look at Texas. They went to all this renewable energy that all of a sudden wasn't renewable when they needed it most.
And that's always been the thing.
Yeah, 25% of their power was coming from so-called renewables, which made the grid more vulnerable.
Uh-huh.
You know, because another thing that happens is when part of the system crashes like that, and suddenly you lose 25%. All the rest has to work harder to balance the system, you know, and you end up having energy sloshing around through the grid in such a way that it can end up self-destructing, destroying control systems, destroying transformers.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to failing to provide the energy during an example of so-called climate change. If there was real climate change, you might expect to see something, the weather being altered like that,
mm-hmm.
okay, in a so-called climate change moment. But in addition to not being able to deliver the energy, it actually puts the whole grid at risk. And this also happened in the United Kingdom, I think, in 2019. You know, they've been adding windmills to their system. And there was a failure in the generators, windmill generators. You know, that basically closed the whole grid down for a day. So people all over the United Kingdom, you know, were trapped in trains and, you know, they had blackouts and all the rest. Just a small taste of what can happen, you know. And these things aren't being inflicted on us by a hostile adversary that knows what it's doing.
No,
right.
You know, they are self-inflicted.
If self-inflicted catastrophes.
And does that... So Texas was kind of self-contained, but
yes.
Most of the time, wouldn't that kind of roll across the country? Who else is self-contained?
Well,
anybody?
Texas is on its own grid.
Right.
And Florida is close to it, you know, but even they are tied into the eastern grid. You know, we basically have three grid systems, the eastern grid, the western grid, and the Texas grid. And that's one of the things that made Texas so attractive for legislation to try to protect it from EMP and cyber warfare. and Senator Bob Hall, again, my hat is off to him, you know, because he's trying again, has just introduced new legislation to try to protect the Texas grid. And I hope Governor Abbott listens to him this time.
Yeah, I would think that's not going to be a tough sell this time around.
I hope not. I hope not. You
well, because if they can do it, then we can look at the rest of it.
Exactly. It'll show the rest of the country how to do it. You know, it'll be the way forward for the rest of the country.
So the whole rest of the country is basically cut up into two grids?
Well, three, if you don't count.
If you take out Texas,
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that should terrify everyone, because if an ice storm there created that much havoc, I mean, if you have half the country that could fall prey to that, and there's no, you know, real escape hatch for that, gosh, that would give people something to think about.
No.
You have 2 minutes to think about it while we do a little break for free enterprise here. Hopefully the kind that's well regulated and overseen. How about that? Because we'll have to.
Well, it doesn't have to be well regulated. It just doesn't have to kill people.
Yeah, you know, I guess I'm
asking for a minimum amount of regulation.
Let's just not kill everybody.
I don't think that's asking for too much.
No, that's like my mom. You know, can't we just not kill everybody? Yeah, there you go. We'll be right back. You are listening to We the People. You can find us at
wethepeopleradio.us.
Good.
Nice.
Not to put too fine a point on it. Hey, so we were chatting here in the studio during the break, and so the question came up: what kind of power, what flavor of power is your favorite? Or what would you recommend? Like, if you got to redo the grid and you know, king for a day, tell everybody what to do.
Well, my highest priority is to get the country protected from EMP and cyber warfare. So I wouldn't replace the whole grid or anything like that.
No.
You know, because that's politically just going to be impossible to do.
But, like, pretend we were starting from scratch. Like, based on what you know now, what...
But if I could be, if I could wave a magic wand, start all over again.
Sure.
Based on what we know now, I like small modular nuclear reactors. I think that's my favorite.
That was Bill's guess.
They don't produce any waste, you know, because the fuel is endlessly reprocessed until it's basically inert, so you don't have the nuclear waste problem that you do with the big nuclear reactors we have now.
Uh-huh.
You can design EMP and cyber hardness right into them. And they would decentralize the grid, so it would eliminate the political problem we have with NERC and FERC and all of the evil doings where they have their tentacles in Congress and in various parts of the Department of Energy all over the U.S. government, obstructing things. It would return power, you know, to cities and communities. They would basically be able to control. I mean, I would want the utility to be privatized, because the private sector was the best for efficiency, but it would give local control, you know, to individual cities, individual communities. Every military base, I'd like to see every military base. There's over 100 of them in the United States. Every large military base have a small modular nuclear reactor designed with enough electricity so that it could supplement and take over from the local civilian grids too. That way you'd be guaranteeing that you couldn't shut down our military deterrent, you know, and disarm us militarily, because they'd have their own power source right there. And at the same time, the military could step in. There'd be islands of survivability just in case anything went wrong, you know, with the civilian part of the system. You know, they could there'd be a backup to whatever the local city or community or region is. There are technologies to be even go further down the line. You know what I'd really like to see? I mean, this alternative that I've just described to you is an example of something that is doable. It's realizable. Mm-hmm. There are small modular nuclear reactors being designed right now with EMP hardness designed into them. But unfortunately, nuclear power is so politically incorrect.
That's what I wondered.
You know, the prospects of that happening are, especially under this administration, are negligible, you know, are almost non-existent. Although, you know, if they really believed in climate change, that's the direction they would go to, because it's actually the perfect solution. If you believed in climate change, too, it would be the perfect solution for that, because these SMRs have the lowest carbon footprint, well, except for hydropower, you know. They have the lowest carbon footprint around. There's also there's an inventor I know in California. I'm not going to mention his name, but he's a friend of mine. I don't have permission to mention him, but he's come up with a great invention, you know, a super efficient turbine that can convert lakes and streams that previously had been unharnessed for electricity. And it would also enable you to revitalize all kinds of small dams that have been abandoned as a source of hydropower. That is the greenest form of electrical energy, and it would also be a way of decentralizing the system, so that you would have, you know, the energy would be local. Going further down, though, and you know, there are technologies in the pipeline that are so advanced that if the government were competent enough to listen to certain people and get this done, that you could really transform our system and the way it works. I can't get into details, but if these were to be realized, you could, for example, run a car off a battery, an electric car off a battery, that would have an almost infinite life. Every house could be built with a battery in it. You know, not Tesla batteries, okay? These are a much more advanced concept that would basically last the life of the house. You know, almost never have to replace it. And what I like about that is that it would return us, I mean, in addition to being the ultimately decentralized system, also the safest system, you know, because it's like having bulwarks in a ship, you know? The smaller the bulwarks and the smaller the islands of survivability, the harder it is going to be for an adversary to attack all of them. And if you had something that was that decentralized, even the small modular nuclear reactors would decentralize things enough that I don't think it would be practical for an adversary to be thinking about attacking our electric power anymore. You know, it's the big grid that makes us vulnerable. But this would definitely, not only would it provide a national security bulwark, but it would provide, I think, it would be another giant step forward toward the kind of society that the founders had in mind when the Constitution was written. You know, before there was electricity, every house had a fireplace, and the heat and cooking and the energy that you needed was all provided by wood in your fireplace. And people didn't have to answer to anybody else. It made every man a king, in a sense, you know?
Sure, you could just look out at the wood pile and know if you were set
right,
or
exactly.
not.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And this battery could, something like that, could return that sense of independence and sense of and individuality and rugged individualism to our society. Anything that breaks down the dependency and the collectivist spider web that we've all become trapped in is good to turning us back into eagles instead of sheep. And
except now their big focus is to get rid of hydropower, which...
Yes, that's right. That's one of the greenies. You know, it's just so... It's not. Don't ask them to be logical, you know, because it's totally irrational. They want to reduce carbon footprints, they say. They want green energy, they say. But it can only be certain selected kinds of green energy. It can't be the greenest and the smallest carbon footprints, like nuclear power or hydropower. Those are politically incorrect, you know?
Yeah.
And they feel under no obligation to explain, you know, these contradictions.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Because it's not rational. That's because their views are not built on logic and rationalism. After all, that's from the Aristotelian classical tradition of linear logical thinking, which is no longer in vogue. You know, you're dealing with basically a new religion that doesn't have to be logical.
Yeah, which should be, you know, when they say stupid should hurt, I think we need to add
it
that.
It will hurt.
We need to
it
add that
hurt.
To the list.
Fact,
it is going to hurt.
Yeah, it's hurting us now, actually, in a big way. People are dying from stupid right now.
Yeah. Well, I really hope that they... I really hope that there is some consideration going forward, and maybe it starts looking more attractive for some reason. You know, I guess things change. Maybe.
Well, technology changes, and I think if we don't turn our back on technology, and really take a hard look at it, we don't need to go back to things like power, wind power, and solar, and that.
Well, those things are all intermittent.
Yeah, but as that develops and becomes more reliable, I can see us going that way. But I don't think that's the answer. I don't think that's
it. Isn't the answer?
No, mm-hmm.
Wind and solar.
It's temporary.
Even looking technologically forward in terms of their greatest efficiencies,
just isn't
there's
there.
There's no way you can provide most of the electricity that we need from those intermittent and unreliable sources.
No.
Do you know that windmills don't even last long enough to pay for themselves?
Solar panels, for the most part, don't either.
They have, and they actually are not green, precisely because of that, because they have to be disposed of, you know?
Jesus Arredondo lined out how much solar there is available, or how much wind availability in California. I hope people do go back and listen to that, because it was interesting.
Yeah, there's only a few
Dr.
places.
Dr. Pry, we have hit the end of the road here. We're going to have to play Beer for My Horses to send you off to enjoy the rest of your day.
Well, goodbye, you Welsh and Irish lovebirds, and thank you for helping save civilization again.
All right.
Yeah, I could never get some other guy to just get picked on all the time. I had to marry him in order to do it. thanks a million. You're listening to We the People. You can find everything at wethepeopleradio.us.
We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.